the sun is shining and all of my favorite plant friends are popping up right now. Speaking of plants, what are you growing this year? Do you know? Do you know what kind of medicine will be in your garden? Or are you still trying to figure it out? Totally okay if you're still trying to figure it out. We're all growing and learning on this journey, right? But if you want some help, I do have a family medicine garden guide. It's basically 10 essential herbs that I feel like every mom needs to know and grow in their yard. I give you some growing tips and ways that you can use it as medicine, and it's totally free. So if you want that, I'm going to pop a link in the show notes here for you to grab it and get your hands digging in the dirt and growing incredible medicine for you and your family.
Hello, and welcome to the Herbalist Path podcast. I'm your host, Mel Muttersbaugh. I'm a clinical herbalist, environmental educator, founder and formulator of an herbal products company called Mountain Mel's Essential Goods. And my most important role in life is being the mother of a beautiful young daughter. I also have this crazy passion for teaching people to use plants as medicine in a safe and effective way. Herbalism is the most sustainable way to take care of yourself, your family, the plants, and our precious planet. In this podcast, you'll get a mix of interviews with fellow herbalists, herb farmers, product makers, herbal educators, clinicians, and plain old plant geeking herb nerds similar to myself. You'll also get some episodes where it's just me dishing you some great info on how you can safely use herbs for yourself and your family. It's an honor to have you here and joining in on a serious mission to inspire a movement where there's an herbalist in every home, again. On the Herbalist Path, I am really excited because today our guest is Bevan Cohen, and he lives right in the middle of the mitten in Michigan, and he is a great herbalist, a speaker, an educator, an author, a seed saver. He wrote the book, The Artisan Herbalist. He also wrote another book, Saving Our Seeds, which is pretty fantastic. I think you're pretty much all about homesteading, living off the land, respecting some cool plants, and doing all the things that really matter in life, right?
You got it, Mel. That's what we're all about here, for sure.
Nice. What got you into studying and learning about plant medicine and herbs?
You know, I've been fascinated with plants for my entire life, for sure. It started when I was a young boy. I lived with my grandmother in an apartment, and we lived right on the edge of town. So sort of where the city meets the country was right where we were at. And we were lucky enough to be next to hundreds of acres of forest, which now is no longer there, right? It's been developed into to housing and that sort of thing. But at the time it was forest as far as the eye could see. And when you're a young boy, I mean, you can spend a whole day out there. And that's pretty much what I did. Playing in the woods, climbing trees, doing things that boys do. And then one day I found these small red berries. And at the time I didn't know what they were, but they looked like little apples. I thought, oh, these look like, you know, Smurf apples or something. And so I found out with a little bit of research of asking around that they were wintergreen berries, and they were delicious. I enjoyed them. And it was my first exposure to the wonders that nature has to offer. And I thought, wow, if there's so much cool stuff just in this little piece of woods that I play in, what is there in the whole wide world? You know, so many plants and so many things. And it just started this obsession, I guess is the only word for it, for all these plants, the food and the medicine and the shelter and all these things that nature provides, all started with that tiny little red berry. And I get obsessive with things, and plants is one that I'm thankful to be obsessed with. It's really framed my whole life. And well, here we are.
That's awesome. I love that story. How fortunate to have that many acres of woods to roam and to have Wintergreen be like, hey, I am your introduction into this plant world. So you ate the Wintergreen berries. Did you like take it to your grandmother and figure out, like, how'd you find out what they were?
I did. I brought some home to my grandmother, and she had an idea of what they may have been, you know, but she referred me then to her sister. So it became kind of a chain of elders referring to, you know, each person. And it, at the time I didn't realize, but now looking back at that, I see that it is such a good example of how this traditional wisdom has kind of been lost and set aside, where at one time, say even with my grandmother's mother, my great grandma, that would have been commonplace and she easily would have known what it was. But even in just a generation later, we've already started to lose that traditional knowledge, that information about the world around us, right up to the point where as a young boy, I had no idea, you know? So I'm lucky now that I have my two young children. I take them out in the woods and wintergreen was the first herb that I showed to them, you know? And I said, this is a plant that you need to know. We go back a long way, right? We're old friends. And I feel that those lessons that I learned growing up helps me as a frame of reference for the lessons that I feel are important to teach my children now. Number one, we start the day in the woods, right?
Heck yeah. How old are your kids?
They are 12 and 7.
Super fun. So, I have an 8-year-old daughter and she's very well versed in the world of living in the woods and knowing great plants. And plantain was her first like real true plant love. And ever since she was like 3, we were at the park one day and one of her friends got an ouchie at the park and she went and found a plantain leaf and brought it to her friend. And at that moment I was like, woohoo, parenting win.
That's so cool. That's awesome. You know, and to see that, what an exciting thing to see that she's already learned. I mean, such an important plant, plantain for sure. Yeah. That she's already aware of it, can identify it, harvest it, use it to heal her friends. You know, that's such a cool thing.
Oh yeah. As you say all of that, it just brings those chills throughout my body. So it's such a gift to be able to share this with our children. And you brought up the great perspective, like that has been lost in one quick generation. Like if you think about it, it was what, 150 years ago, approximately, that the pharmaceutical industry started extracting plant constituents to make other drugs and medicines. And since then, we've been marketed to and told all the right ways and the wrong ways and lost our connection to the plants and the nature. So I'm happy for people like you to come out and share that with your kids and share it with the masses. Like, it's so important, you know?
I think it is, you know, you're absolutely right. And when we think about, you know, the rise of pharmaceutical medicine, or we could think about the rise of convenience foods or whatever it may be, at the time of their introduction, they were outstanding. People were like, wow, what is this? You know, this new, powerful, convenient, whatever. And as maybe it's human nature, we like to follow the path of least resistance and to hand over these ideas for the sake of convenience or whatever it may have been. It was such a slippery slope so quickly. Just a couple generations later,
so quick.
People don't even know where their food and medicine comes from anymore, it seems like. So, you know, the work that we do as herbalists is important now, sure, in the moment, but it's also important for later.
Yeah.
Right? When we pass this knowledge on to our community, to our friends, to our children, that the seeds that we plant there, that might be some of the most powerful work that we do.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I'm like, which direction do I go with the next question or comment? Because there was so much that you said right there that I'm like, ooh, I want to speak on that. I do have one curiosity. You spoke a lot about your grandmother and your great aunt, I would say. Were your parents into this kind of stuff too? Or were your parents like my parents, who were that skip generation who were fascinated by all the marketing and all the new instant fix pill or microwave TV dinners and junk, you know?
You're right. That's where it was. So my great grandmother lived, you would think from seeing these old black and white pictures of her that it was like Little House on the Prairie, you know? And she would, I remember, I have vivid childhood memories of her being really little, of her baking bread. You know, she was always baking bread and doing these sorts of things. She was very old fashioned, I guess, is what my grandma would have called it, where my grandma wanted this more modern lifestyle. And my grandma left and moved to New York City. And that's where she met her husband. And that's where my mother was born. And so there was this huge gap from these old traditional experiences to very modern, fast-paced, packaged microwave things. Like, just like you said, that was the experience. So for me, it was a revelation, a revolution, we could say, to change these things, to kind of break that cycle. It was a 180, a total 180. My kids, they've never seen a microwave. You know what I mean? We don't have that sort of thing.
We don't either.
But I grew up with one, you know. I spent all of my time outside. Yeah, you know, I grew up in the 80s. I think that's just what we did.
Yeah, go outside.
Right.
Till the chase cars, on, you know? Bite tires. Like,
a different things. World that the kids live in now, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
But so to make a short answer here, no, my parents and my grandmother was not into herbalism, and they weren't into plants. And, you know, I had a little tiny garden on the balcony of our apartment where I would grow radishes and things, you know, and that was it. That was it for me. So to be where I'm at in my life now was a radical change in behaviors, in perspectives and philosophies and everything to get to where I'm at. So it was a hard-earned battle. So to be able to start my kids here, I feel that, oh, what are they going to accomplish? It's going to be big things after this, you know? So
it's really, truly amazing to watch that. I'm in a similar boat as you, that my family definitely doesn't come from an herbalist background. And I'm kind of the black sheep out there. You know, my mom's trying to learn from me now, but she's got so much of, well, one, I'm her daughter, so it's hard for her to learn from me, right? Even though I learn from my daughter every day. But also just, you know, she's 67 and she's got so much of those ways washed into her brain. So it's really interesting. So I know that wintergreen and being out on those acres in the woods, exploring, playing, I hope you made mud pies like I did, because I did tons of that and had pet worms,
of course,
and kissed frogs and all kinds of weird things. But how did you, like, as you came into your like adolescent or even adult and growing self, because I think that's a huge time of transition. You know, we're starting to break away from our parents' ways and be like, holy crap, the world is different than I knew, you know?
Right.
How did you start coming into those places and come to a point where now you're like a homesteader and you're reliant on the land?
You know, and I don't know, a lot of my growing up was probably pretty standard stuff, but I've been told now that some of the things I did as a young boy was unusual. You know, when I was 16, I was really into Tai Chi. I did a lot of Tai Chi out in the woods. I found that the solitude of the forest was very good for me, especially as a young adolescent, very confusing times. It was a really good escape, I guess we could say, you know, but it also allowed me these opportunities to develop relationships with plants, you know. So for herbalism, for me, and this is something in my book, The Artisan Herbalist, that I tried to, one of the messages I tried to convey was the importance of relationships with plants, you know, and that's something that I came to begin to understand as a very young boy, that importance that it is, that relationships with plants is, it's a give and take type of thing. They're not like commodities, they're not ingredients, they're not that sort of thing. They are, if anything, more powerful and important than I am on this planet, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's humbling to see that, you know. But I was lucky enough to meet up with some other like-minded folks in my early 20s, some other plant people, if you will. And we formed a study group type of thing. And, you know, we all came to plants in very different ways. You know, I obviously had my perspective and my practice with what I was doing, pretty much wandering aimlessly, you know, just learning things with no real structure until we got this group together. And these folks came from other places. And it was such a cool thing because everybody was looking at it from a different point of view. Mm-hmm. And some of the people in that group, one lady in particular, she was a pagan. She was this Wiccan. And she had brought a book of herbal magic or whatever, you know, and it was a Scott Cunningham book. I remember it clearly. I have the first edition of it over here on the bookshelf. just simply for the sentimental value of it, right? And while my practice of herbalism today is not steeped in the magical practices of Scott Cunningham's books, what that book did was it showed me that plants are different than what I think, right? Plants offer so much. At the time, you see plants as, oh, you know, it's trees out here. Plants in the garden. You see it as like, it's flat, like it's not living, you know? And that book allowed me to see the plants in a way that I had never done before. They offer so much. I said, wow, this is a magical world, if you will. And I still believe that to this day. Everything about plants is magical. We don't, in my opinion, need to be scientists to understand the benefits of plants. You know, we don't need to break down the chemical constituents of understanding. That certainly plays a role in some places, but we could simply look at it even from like an indigenous point of view. These plants offer us something very special.
I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
I love this time of year. It's spring, the sun is shining, and all of our beautiful plant friends are popping up. It's amazing. Unless, of course, you're one of the millions of people who suffer from seasonal allergies. You know, the itchy, watery eyes, the sneezing and wheezing that's straight miserable. Thankfully, there are some amazing herbs that can help you with all of that. Just like the herbs inside of Kick-Ass Allergy from Wish Garden Herbs, one of my absolute favorite herbal companies out there. Kick-Ass Allergy, yes, I said ask without the K at the end. Anyways, this formula has yerba santa, nettles, echinacea for that immune support, and orange peels, all which come together to help dry up those excessive mucosal secretions. Yep, I'm talking about the sniffles and the stuffy nose, the watery eyes, and all that jazz. This blend also acts as a great expectorant and can help ease the swelling and inflammation in those mucosal tissues. It is a top go-to for seasonal allergies. And get this, they combine all those beautiful herbs with glycerin, so it actually tastes pretty darn good. Or should I say, it tastes kick-ass, without the K at the end. Anyways, if allergy season is miserable for you and you want a natural remedy that actually works for those itchy eyes and being all sneezy and wheezy, you have got to check out Wish Garden Herbs Kick-Ass Allergy. And for those of you with the little kiddos, no sweat, they've got a kick-it allergy too. And you pregnant mamas? You don't have to suffer either. They've got a kick-ass allergy formula just for you. So head over to wishgardenherbs.com or check out the link in the show notes and go grab yourself some kick-ass allergy so you can enjoy spring again.
So many things very special. And whether you're coming at it from that magical perspective, the spiritual perspective, the scientific perspective, I think that's part of the beauty of being immersed in the world of herbalism and plants is that you can come at it from all of those ways. And there's incredible value there. There's incredible value in the Wiccan, witchy, magic, woo-woo stuff of plants. There's incredible value in the healing of just being able to sit next to a plant and feel its energy and its magic and its medicine. You can feel its medicine just by being in the presence of it. And that is the beauty. And to me, that is the relationship also you spoke of earlier. And it's so incredibly powerful and beautiful. And it's also sad how many people today have either lost touch with that or just never had that opportunity. And I think that, well, I know that all of our ancestors had that opportunity, everyone. So yeah, people today have lost touch with it. And you know, obviously the world of herbalism is rising and more people are becoming aware, which is really, really beautiful. Thanks to people like you speaking about it, writing about it, sharing this information with people. It's so incredibly important. And I love it. I don't know.
I appreciate that. You know, like, and I think that what you're saying here is so important because, you know, when we think about how our ancestors all had that opportunity, you know, and it wasn't in many cases, especially if we went back a few generations of our ancestors, it wasn't by choice necessarily. No. It was just reality. That's just the way that it was. And so for those of us that are doing the work now, for the most part, we come to it by choice. We have chosen through one reason or another, some path that brought us to this place where we've made that choice. And hopefully we can use these platforms that we're given to help other people maybe make those choices as well.
Yeah.
And that can be difficult for people to step outside of their comfort zone to do something different, which is why I feel so blessed about to come back to the study group when I was young. Immediately in my herb work, I was shown that there's so many different approaches to this and they're all just as valid.
Yeah.
Right. So it really kept me open-minded. So I feel that allowed me to be flexible in my experiences and in my path of learning. And where other people possibly who have maybe not been exposed to that can seem a little bit more rigid and uncomfortable branching out. So I think that the work that is particularly with what you're doing, and especially like a podcast like this, that reaches so many people, you know, the message that you can broadcast to all these people to allow them to see something that they may not have seen before. And it opens the door to a whole new world, the wonderful world of herbs.
Yeah. What a great world that is. That's a really great perspective and thing to mention there too. Like you just spoke about like getting into this vulnerable space and also utilizing these platforms. And if you would have talked to me a couple of years ago, I was like, I hate technology. I'm never going to I just want to play with the plants and hug the trees. And that's all I want to do. And, you know, I had this one person say to me, well, why don't you use technology for what it can do for your mission and your message? And, you know, you talked about how you choose this path as an herbalist and however you may get there. But sometimes those plants call to you and choose you too. So, and you have no option but to do exactly that. And then you have to learn these platforms and, you know, learn what it is to podcast and learn that editing podcasts sucks. So you better hire someone to do it. And, you know, it's a whole nother world and it's a really important thing. And I'm glad that you see that. And I'm glad that you're also writing books and have a YouTube channel and sharing so much valuable information out there. So you do have a couple of books, The Artisan Herbalist, and it's The Seed Savers, right? I don't have it right in front of me right now.
Well, so I actually have three books currently. So there's The Artisan Herbalist, which is my newest from New Society Publishers, Saving Our Seeds, The Practice and Philosophy, which is an instructional guide on how to, you know, harvest and process seeds. I think we cover 43 species in that book. And then my first book is actually called From Our Seeds and Their Keepers. It's not quite as well known. It was independently published. And it's a collection of stories from folks that I've met traveling around about themselves and the seeds that they keep. You know, and it was just, I just was collecting stories and seeds as I traveled, and they just kind of ended up becoming this book. It just kind of came to be a life of its own. I do want to say something though about what your resistance to technology, because I relate to that so much. You know, it was just this pandemic that recently hit was the only reason that we have an Instagram or a YouTube or any of those things, because up until that moment I was very resistant to that. I'm busy, do I have time to take on new things, do I want to learn yet a new thing? I don't really think so. And then, like, just, you know, nature said, well, you're going to stop doing all those things and you're going to find something else to do. Whether you like it or not, this is what's happening. And I don't sit still very well. I like to stay busy. And
heard.
So, right. So yeah. The Instagram became a thing, which was so cool, you know. And I know for folks that have had Instagram for a long time, I, you know, probably think I sound silly, but it was so fun to take pictures of things. For me, it caused me to slow down and be intentional and really observe these moments, these photos. I took a lot of tomato photos at first. I started the Instagram pretty much around tomato harvest season. But that making me slow down and be more intentional with these moments and to see the beauty in every moment, which was something I'd gotten so busy that I had kind of lost touch of. And so it was a blessing amongst the challenges that happened. You know, and I think that's how nature works. You know, sometimes as hard as we resist, she's the boss. And
totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely do. Yeah, I had made the decision to start to embrace technology just before the pandemic hit. So I was already in that mindset, like, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this junk, even if I hate it, because it's going to help me spread this really powerful and important mission. And it's been a challenge. It's not my favorite thing to do. I love doing the podcast. I love talking with other herbalists. It's a lot of fun. I love hearing back from people that have learned so much on the podcast, and my YouTube channel is also developing a bit too. So those parts are really fun and exciting, but still nothing beats the beauty of spending that time with nature and just being immersed there. So
for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about your farm and what all you do there. What are you growing there? What are you making? What are you serving your community with there? Yeah, I bet there's a lot to talk about. So maybe I want to talk a lot a bit about your farm.
There's a lot to say. Yeah, small house farm. So, you know, small house, inevitably people think that means I live in a tiny house. I don't. It's a regular size house, you know. I mean, maybe it's a little small compared to some people's standards, but it's plenty. It's plenty.
Right.
You know, small house really reflects more of our philosophy than the building that we live in, you know. We believe in a slower, more intentional lifestyle. And when we moved out here to the farm, that was really our ultimate goal. I didn't have a lot of specific plans for what we were doing, but I knew I needed to stop doing what I was and try something different. You know, it's too easy to get caught up with things. So I was like, I'm going to try to unplug from that a little bit. So we came out here to try something more intentional. And I found one thing I've learned in life is that I need to not have as much control over things. It's kind of let go and let nature take its course, right? And so that was the plan here, was I was going to kind of let Small House become what it wanted to be. And I was just going to be here to help it along the way. And that's really what happened. So there's a lot of things that go on here. We grow a lot of crops. We grow our food here and that sort of thing. We grow a lot of seeds. That's become a big thing that we do. You know, we offer seeds, you know, commercially through our website. We sell some seeds that we grow here. We've founded a number of seed libraries. We have an organization called the Michigan Seed Library Network, which is an umbrella organization for 96 seed libraries. So we spend a lot of time teaching people about seeds and why they matter, and why we should be saving them. Right? So we do a lot of seed growing here, as well as herbs. Those are the two things. But I'm lucky because I'm on the end of a dead end dirt road, and I'm across the street from 1,100 acres of forest where I'm at. Not too bad. So we spend a lot of time foraging for food and for medicine and for that sort of stuff. So from that, initially, I guess we'll back it up even more. This is how many different things are happening here. When we first decided, you know, when we moved out to the farm, we needed to be making some money. And I thought that, you know, I didn't want to do any of the things that I had been doing with my life up to that point. I needed to do something different. So I decided that I was going to cold press seed and nut oils, right? Because that's reasonable. That seems right.
Yeah, that's easy.
That's a normal job that people have. So my wife, you know, she's the most patient woman on the planet. And she was like, all right, Bevan, we're going to see where you're going to go with that. And so we started cold pressing sunflower seeds, you know, and this sort of stuff. I got a hand turn oil press, and we're pressing these oils. And I had big dreams at first, like, you know, you always do.
Oh, yeah.
Before reality kicks in.
Right.
A lot of work. And when you're not producing your food, and we could say this about anything, when you're not growing your own herbs, when you're not making your own medicines, when you're not growing your own food, if you're not producing these things, when you're just consuming them, you don't realize necessarily all the things that go into making that happen. So and when you go to the grocery store and you see the whole aisle of oils to choose from, there's no way that you could ever imagine how labor intensive that might be. And I'm here to tell you, it can be, it's ridiculous. But with the herbs that we were working with and the oils that I was pressing, I suddenly realized that in my hands, I already had what Small House was supposed to be, right? I just had to get out of the way for a second. So we started crafting and offering a full line of herbal wellness products, all crafted with herbs that we grow or gather from our forest with oils that I press right here on the farm. Awesome. And it came to be. You know, and it's an interesting thing. People seem to, that's unique in and of itself that we press our oils for our products. But in every opportunity that I have to teach about herbs, I like to talk about that because, you know, we spend a lot of time studying the herbs and the benefits that they have and why we choose them. And then people just throw it in olive or throw it in coconut oil or whatever. And that's fine. But if we put just as much time into thinking about the oils themselves, which all come from plants, which all offer beneficial qualities, right? We can make even better products when we really build that relationship with all the parts of our medicine. And well, that's the story, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I have to ask, just as a person who makes a lot of products, who also loves to speak and do 5,000 things at one time, how big is your team to help you process all of these seeds, to process all these oils, to process all these products and get them out to the masses? Because that takes a lot of work. And I completely understand when I walk down the grocery store aisle, how much work can go into that.
Right. So you'll be happy to hear that there's four of us. Okay. It's myself and my wife and my two children.
Awesome.
That's it. It's just a family affair. You know, so we keep everything very, very small scale. And that was a thing that was a lesson I keep relearning, because inevitably you always want to scale up. You always want to be the next big thing. You always want to like mass produce. And that, I mean, that's kind of what our culture teaches us. Right. But that's not reality. That doesn't work. That's not sustainable. That's not healthy for me. So I've continued to learn the lesson that the smaller, the better. Everything we make, I touch, I know, I have, right? Every seed off of our website, I've literally tended and grown, processed and packaged myself. And I know that it's finite. I can only grow so big, but I'm okay with that, you know? And there's a lot of philosophical choices that you have to make there and things to come to that point. And I'm privileged to be in a situation where I can make those choices. But I'm all the better for it, really. As difficult as it may have been to get to this point, it's
worth it.
It's worth it, man, for sure.
Yeah, we're pretty darn tiny too. It's me and my partner, and then occasionally our daughter's not at the age where she's gonna work with us yet. But every once in a while we have another friend come in and help for a while, and it's a lot of work still, but you know, it's
so much work, you know, but anything worth doing is worth that kind of effort, you know,
for sure.
My oldest son, Elijah, he's 12 now. So he's kind of going through these stages. Now that he's finally getting to the size that he could be really useful, he's also about to be a teenager. So I don't know how useful he's going to be, you know, so we'll see how that goes. I got all my fingers crossed. I can get a few more years out of him. You know, he kind of is already has that entrepreneurial spirit where he's like, oh, this was fun, Dad, but I kind of have my own ideas that I would like to pursue. So I got to leave him space to be his own person and do his own thing too, you know?
Absolutely. I'm curious what he's into. Like, what's he thinking about?
All sorts of different stuff. He originally just recently started an egg business. We got all these chickens now and these eggs, and he's selling these eggs, and that was that sort of thing, which is a great crash course in economics for him to realize all the chicken feed and the time and the egg washing and all these things. It's not just easy money, you know, so that was the thing. He's still doing that. He's working on phasing that out a little bit. And I'm not sure what his next big thing is going to be. We've been propagating a lot of plants, a lot of trees, elder trees in particular. We did.
Okay.
I got little elder trees in pots all over the place.
Awesome.
So I think he's got something planned for that, but I don't know.
That's so much fun. That's really beautiful. I love watching what the kids, you know, become interested in. Like right now, my daughter, at first she wanted to be a florist, and this summer she decided she wants to be a raft guide, and I'm like, cool, you know. Wow. And now I'm like, well, why don't you like be a raft guide and take people on wildflower tours on their journey? And marry it all together, you know?
I like that. I like to try to guide Elijah a little bit like that too, but then I'm always like, well, I don't want to pollute his thinking too much with my own ideas. So I try to steer clear and let him do his own thing, because it turns out I think he's smarter than I am already.
Well, all right.
So if I just stay out of the way, man, he's going to do something big, you know? Right. And I just want to be there to witness it.
That's awesome. Kids are magical. They teach us
they
so much.
They sure are.
So much fun. Hey, if you were a beginning herbalist right now and you knew nothing about plant medicine, but you were curious about it, put yourself in those shoes, but then take your wisdom and your experience, where would you tell someone to start?
In their backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think that one of the lessons that I've learned is the accessibility of Mother Nature, right? Mother Nature always provides for us. And when I teach these classes and I meet folks that are new to herbalism, they have these notions that it's kind of a mysterious thing. Where do these plants come from? And like, oh, I don't know what to do. It's such a big thing, you know? But in reality, and one of the first lessons I try to teach is, right in your own backyard is almost everything that you need. Right? We like the plantain that we talked about, dandelion, yep, self-heal, all these things are right here. And if we can focus on this small little space in the place that we already exist, maybe we can realize all of the things that are available, right? Nothing needs to be big. Nothing needs to be mysterious. If we just go into our backyard and just sit in the backyard, find a plant, that's all you got to do, you know? Beautiful things will start happening.
Yeah.
So that's the advice that I like to give people.
I think that's fantastic advice. Like, there's so much to discover and explore in our backyards. And it's really, really such a beautiful gift. I like to ask people what their favorite herb is. So I'm going to do that to you. I wasn't planning on it until just this moment, because I was about to start talking about my favorite herb, but I want to hear first your favorite herb.
Who's my favorite kid, right?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
And it's a very tough one.
So, you know, that answer probably would change over the seasons, over the years. That probably changes a lot. But I come back, I think I'm going to say wintergreen is my favorite, because not only was it the very first herb that I worked with. All right, dig it. You're going to get the whole story. Here we go.
Yeah.
So I already told the story about when I first met wintergreen as a little boy out in the woods, right? Okay, so fast forward now to, I don't know, 15 years ago or something, when I was first meeting who was going to become my future wife, Heather is her name. When I first met Heather, the very first time we met, I was living in an apartment on the edge of town. Now the woods that I was by used to be where my grandma's woods were, but it had all been developed into housing except for this one section of woods that they called Huron Park, right? So Huron Park, and it was right by my apartment. And I would go, I took Heather out there for a first date on a hike through Huron Park, showing off in the only way that I know how, by showing her how many plants I can identify during our hike, right? Here's these plants, and I showed her wintergreen. We sat down, so this was a new experience for her. She had never really done something like this. She had never eaten a wintergreen berry. It was her very first wintergreen experience, was on our first date at Huron Park, right? So I'm showing off, you know, what a stud. All right, now fast forward to the future. Now we're married, we have two kids, we live here at Small House Farm. We harvest wintergreen berries from the woods across the street. A giant 1,100 acre forest known as Huron Forest. Totally different place, same name of the woods. And now it's totally full circle. My family's out there harvesting wintergreen together. So wintergreen has been a part of my herbal journey from the very first step up into the moment that we're at right now.
It's an ongoing love story.
It's an ongoing love story. Sure is.
Beautiful. I love that. How do you guys use wintergreen?
Well, so in a multitude of ways. I mean, obviously we snack on it a lot in the woods. The kids love to pick it and snack on the berries, which are right now here in Central Michigan. Right now, they're at the peak ripeness. This is premium wintergreen berry picking time. So that's been happening a lot. And they like to show off to their friends and show them that they can identify berries and stuff. They think that's pretty cool, right? So we obviously do that. I like to make tea from the leaves, you know, and you probably are aware of this, but wintergreen tea is a very patriotic beverage if you're American, back in the colonial days. And they had this big tea party, right? You might be familiar with this thing in Boston where they something happened with the tea supply. And they didn't want to drink the tea. So wintergreen tea became a very popular beverage, right? And it became to be known as the most patriotic of beverages. If you were a true American patriot, you drank wintergreen tea, not the king's tea, you know? So I drink a lot of wintergreen tea. We ferment it because, you know, it's a very thick, glossy leaf. So we break that down and we ferment the tea overnight to get a good extraction from it. So you can get, you know, all of that good flavor as well. But wintergreen is incredibly medicinal, most certainly. We use it in topical salve that we make. It's one of the ingredients that we offer through Small House. It's a muscle and joint rub that we produce with it's probably a handful of other ingredients, but wintergreen is one of the main ingredients in that. So again, herbs offer so much more than just one thing. They're multi-purpose, you know, it's food, it's beverage, it's medicine, it's everything that I need.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. It's like never ending learning, you know, like, holy cow, I didn't realize this plant that I've been using for X years for these 3 to 5 things could also do this, you know, it's back to
the lessons that we learn from plants. Yeah, you know, it never ends. You know, herbalism is such a cool thing just to study and to practice because it's always evolving, always growing. There's always so much more that the plants can show us.
Heck yeah, that's exactly what I love about it. I was a student as a child who got bored very quickly and easily, and I'll never get bored with herbalism. You know, I'm always going to be fascinated and be able to share that love and that passion. And it's such a beautiful, beautiful gift that we all have. So
absolutely.
That's exciting. You're the first person I've heard say wintergreen was like the one plant that they choose. And I love the story behind it. And it's such a great one. It's not as readily available where I am as it is where you are. So that's a great one. I love hearing that.
I would be curious to hear some of the plants that other people chose.
Yeah. A lot of times it's dandelion, it's nettles, calendula, you know, the standards.
Classics. Yeah. You know, and I easily could have said any one of those now that you mentioned it, because those for sure.
It's a tough question to come down with one.
Tough question. And for at the end, I made my choice based on that relationship. Because at the end of the day, that's what herbs represent to me.
It's a love story.
Yeah.
I love it. That's really fun and exciting. And yeah, we could pick all kinds of different herbs all day long.
But all day long.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. Okay, let's go back to if you were a beginner and you were just getting into herbalism and you've decided to go out into your backyard because you heard this guy on this podcast that was really smart say, go in my backyard. Well, what the heck do they do then? How do they actually, what would you recommend would be the first remedy, dare I say such controversial words for them to make?
I would say to brew tea. That's what the first thing I would offer. One herb, a singular herb tea would be the thing that I would obviously recommend first. Because I think that through tea, it's such a tangible way to experience everything about that herb. You know, you get the aromas and you can get the flavors. You can get the feelings that it offers, you know, the benefits from it. It's meditative in its own way, brewing that tea. You know, it gives you that opportunity to be still in that moment with that herb to really experience all of the things that it's trying to offer you, right? So in The Artisan Herbalist, that's how we begin the book, really, is by getting a notebook, because that's obviously very important, and brewing a cup of tea with one single herb, because that's, I think, the best place to start. And I still like to do that. I mean, I've been studying herbs now, we'll say 2 decades and just call it that because I don't want to date myself too much. But if it's been a while, and I still find the benefit of just sitting down with one herb and just spending that time experiencing all of the sensations that it offers.
Yeah, I think that is a beautiful piece of advice and wisdom and a really, really important piece of getting to know the plants and forming that relationship. And Yeah, it goes deep. And you can do that with that one herb for like the next 5 years and still learn something new.
You're right. And that's the beauty of the notebook, I think. So for me, you know, and I recommend everything should be in the notebook. Successes, failures, recipes, experiences, I write it all down, you know, because you can, like you said, sit with the same herb for 5 years and go back through your notes and you'll have different experiences, you know, you have different sensations, different flavors, different everything. Will eventually be different. And that's, and yet to the complex beauty of herbalism is it's always in motion, always moving.
It's amazing. It's truly amazing. So I'm curious, I hear you in that you had this really awesome study group. You had your grandmother and your great aunt to give you some words of wisdom. You definitely learned a lot from the plants. Have you had any other amazing teachers that helped guide you on your herbalist path that like really just stuck out for you or showed you things that, I don't know, any amazing teachers?
Well, you know, over the years, I think I've had the opportunity to learn from lots of really groovy folks. You know, obviously the plants are the greatest teacher, but some people in a way help translate the plant's message so I can see what the plants are trying to teach me, right? So, you know, I've sat down with some cool folks, you know. Jim McDonald is a guy that lives here in Michigan. He does some cool stuff. I've been lucky to participate in, he's one of the organizers of a herbal fair that happens here in Michigan. So I've taught at that, you know, and that sort of thing, which is cool, but I also get to learn at those opportunities, you know? That's been super fun. I remember Seven Song, did some great stuff. I had an opportunity to study with him at a couple of these events. I joined a few years ago, the International Herb Association. They had their conference was here in Michigan. It was in Battle Creek, Kalamazoo or something. I don't really remember that. That doesn't matter. But since it was in Michigan, I had the opportunity to go. So I went to this event and I met just an amazing group of folks. And what was so cool about the International Herb Association is it was, again, very different people from very different places that all had different perspectives and approaches to herbalism. It really reminded me a lot of the study group back in the day, except these were all older, wiser, far more experienced herbalists. It wasn't just a bunch of us in the dark. It was people turning on the lights, if you will. So I learned from, I mean, Susan Belsinger was there, Stephen Foster, just amazing folks that all had something unique to share with me that just opened my eyes once again to facets of herbalism that I didn't even know existed yet.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most beautiful things about it all is like, there are so many brilliant teachers out there. I also have had the great fortune of learning with Jim and Seven Song and many other great teachers. And that's where the beauty and the real excitement comes in. It's like you get to infuse all of that into whatever the plants, the lessons and everything come to bring for you. I had Jim on the podcast a couple of months ago too. So it was really fun to reconnect with him. He's a lot of fun. He's a really entertaining teacher.
Yes.
And he's brilliant, obviously. So what a great joy and honor it is to learn from all of these people, you know, and then to not only learn from them, but then to take those lessons and share it with more people and still honor them as the people that shared this information with us. It's a beautiful gift. It's a beautiful journey. And
in a way we become sort of ripples in the pool, right? As we absorb this information, reinterpret it through our own experience and then share it with somebody else, you know? So it's like continually evolving opportunities, you know, for everybody to learn something from that central point where it spreads out to hit so many people, you know, through so many different lenses. And I think that's one of the beauties of the networking and community of herbalism. That's a thing that I think is really neat. And I see this a lot in the seed saving world as well. It's such a eclectic yet tight-knit community of people. It's really wild when these like-minded folks come together. The beauty of it, the energy that it creates.
Oh, it's magic. Also,
I went to the Heartwood Herb Gathering up in Ontario a couple years ago. I was invited up there to speak, and it was a group of people that you know, they had experienced this event together a multitude of times, and they all knew each other quite well. So in a way, you could say I was like the outsider, you know, coming up into Canada for this event. And they welcomed me with a warm embrace, like I was a part of the family. And it was just the energy of so many beautiful people coming together to celebrate something so powerful, something really so rudimentary. The essence of existence, if you will, is plants, right?
Yeah.
And to celebrate that together connects us in ways that, I mean, they're not even physical connections. They're somehow, there's something deeper than that.
Oh yeah, for sure. Absolutely. There's nothing that brings me greater joy than being in a conference with other herbalists, and that deep connection, that inner knowing, and the shared love, joy, and passion, and understanding that what work we're doing is so incredibly important for so many different reasons. It's truly, truly beautiful. My first herb conference is where I got hooked. That's where I was like, oh, these are my people. This is what I need to do. And I was really, really fortunate that it was at Brighton Bush Herbal Conference in Brighton Bush, Oregon. And I can drive there and not hit a single stoplight and take all mountain windy back roads to get there. And there's hot springs. And I went to an anniversary year. So there was Rosemary Gladstar. There was Christopher Hobbs. There was Tim Blakely. There was Cascade Anderson Geller, who has been a very, very, very powerful voice in my journey. And yeah, I just remember there were so many amazing people there. And I didn't know anybody. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I just kind of went on a whim. I saw something about it and like bought tickets and was there a couple weeks later. And at that point, I had just been doing some online studies, and I had been reading books, and I had been experimenting and playing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And,
yeah.
And I went to that conference and I was like, I know what I need to do when I grow up. And it's, you know,
that's awesome.
Yeah, totally. And it's so funny to look back even prior to that conference, how many other things in my life led me down this path as well. So, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful stuff. And even me getting to do this podcast with you, and I didn't know you before this podcast and before you had reached out, but this connection, it's beautiful. And I love to hear the stories, and I love it so much. So it's been really, really great getting to connect with you. I'm really grateful that you reached out. So
I am as well. You know, you never know what you're going to get in this world. And you know, this has definitely been a highlight, was being able to connect with you. It's very, very cool to have this opportunity to sit and chat with you. I think that the work that you do is very important. So for me, it's an honor to have this opportunity to sit on your podcast and to share my ideas on herbs. So
duly,
you
know, honored.
I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, for sure. Can we chat a little more about your books, and just because we're going to, yeah, I want to hear more about your books and where people can find them and what they're all about. And I want to find out about the From Our Seeds and Their Keepers, because that sounds like a lot of really fun stories to read about. Very entertaining. And then, you know, I really want to tap in a bit to the seed keeping, because that's a really important thing. And I'm not as well-versed in that area as you are. So yeah, enlighten these listeners.
Well, I would love to. So, you know, book writing is something that I would like to say I wish I would have done this sooner in life, because I've really enjoyed it so much. But, you know, life happens at the pace that it chooses to happen. So I'm thankful for it happening at all.
Yeah.
Writing has been such a joy for me to work through my own thought process on what plants mean to me, whether they're for seeds or food or herbs, medicine, whatever it may be. It's really helped me fine tune my point of view to find a way to express it in words, right? To put it down on paper. It's really helped me articulate the significance of plants in my life. So my first book that we talked about, From Our Seeds and Their Keepers, is really just stories. You know, it's stories that I tell of my experiences and the stories that the folks that I've met on the road. In particular, it's over a 2-year period, from 2016 to 2017. We collected all of the stories. It became a book that came out in 2018. So there's a lot of overlapping theory through the book, where we find that seeds connect people in ways that we don't see. And we could, you know, expand that to where we're even at right now, just with you and me, that plants themselves connect people. And that we may not see the connections until we maybe step back from it, or we've moved past that and we look back upon it and we say, oh, look at this path that we've been on and look at where we've come together, where, you know, that intersection of our lives is because of plants, all these things that bring us together. So, you know, that book, I thought it did pretty well. I travel a lot to teach about herbs and seeds and that sort of thing. So I brought the book with me and I got a pretty good response to it. But a lot of folks said, you know, I love this book. I'm so inspired by it. I love this, but I don't know how to save seeds. And I wish this book taught me how to save seeds. Boom. So now we have to write the second book, which became Saving Our Seeds, which, like I said, it covers 43 species in depth. Everything that you need to know to grow and harvest and process and store these seeds. But because of the person that I am, it's also filled with stories as well. I believe in teaching through parable. I think that that's the easiest way to connect to people is through stories. So it's got, again, stories of mine, stories from some seed keepers, laced throughout the book. And the way that we tried to lay it out, I thought was really interesting. You know, one example is Dr. Mehmet Öztun. He's a friend of mine. He lives in West Virginia right now. He's a Turkish immigrant. He came here from Turkey. And when he moved here, one of the things that got him turned on to seeds was, you know, he was trying to cook traditional foods from his homeland and he couldn't find the right eggplants. You know, here in the States, you get the one eggplant that they got at the grocery, you know, but in Turkey, they have such diversity of eggplants. And for each particular dish, not only had its own cooking technique, but also a particular eggplant for that dish. And he realized that that wasn't accessible here in the States, which launched his journey into finding these eggplants, bringing them to the United States and preserving them so people can appreciate this Turkish culture, right? So we've got Mehmet's story and it's in the eggplant section of the book, right? So we tried to connect the stories to the seeds. So as you're reading the book and you experience, say, eggplants and how to save their seeds and how to grow them, then you see the cultural significance of the food, right? Because it's the food is what connects us to our seeds. It's what connects us to each other, right? Again, it's our intersection of plants. Then we move on to The Artisan Herbalist, which is my most recent book, which is diverges away from seeds, but it still obviously talks about plants. And we talk about 43 different herbs, how to grow, forage, identify, discover these plants, and then craft them into teas, tinctures, and oils for use with, you know, for your family and your community or whatever it might be. The end of the book, the last chapter of the book, is actually an instructional guy on how to start an herbal business, which was something that the editor really thought would add a value to the book. I kind of struggled with that idea. You know, I was like, well, I don't want to try to commercialize anything. So although it walks you through, I mean, permits and legalities and accounting and all these particulars that you need to have for a successful business, it is laced with philosophy of mine on the importance of relationships and how that is the underlying theme of everything that you do as an herbalist. If you become an herbal business, that's certainly its own thing. But a successful ethical business has this foundation of relationships, absolutely, right? That place where we intersect as a business partner, or, you know, as a businessman, we intersect with our customers and our clients and our plants is where that intersection lies, right? So the theme of all the books really is this intersection where people and plants come together.
Awesome. I love it. That's so exciting and a great way to go about it. And I absolutely agree about the importance of story. Like, you can sit there and write about how an herb works and how to make something with it, but when you can make that deep connection to a story of where it comes from and why, or, you know, those kinds of things, I think it's so much more powerful and it sticks with people better. So that's brilliant. Where can people find your books?
Well, the place that I like to recommend is directly from my website, which is smallhousefarm.com. And at smallhousefarm.com, they can get books, they can get seeds, they can get herbal products, all sorts of goodies. And it's got a hub that'll connect you to our social media, our YouTube, all that sort of thing. But you can certainly buy the books in any book, you know, store, wherever your books are sold. And I like to recommend, if you're going to go online to buy books, there's a website called Bookshop, which is pretty neat. And it connects you to local bookstores. So you can still get all the conveniences of online shopping while still supporting your local bookstore, which is one of the most important things we have in our communities is our bookstores. So
yeah, I love Bookshop as well. That's where I send my book list too. So I'm definitely going to make sure that your books are on my list for beginning herbalists, and hopefully more people will go out there and buy them, because that's really, really exciting. Hopefully people are going to go to smallhousefarm.com and get some of your hand-pressed oils and herbal products, and how they are all made together by the hands of you and your family on your land, and the land across the street from your land. Like, that's awesome. That is so special and unique, and it's not something that can be found everywhere. So beautiful. Awesome. I love the work that you're doing. It's really incredible.
I appreciate that, Mel. I really do. You know, I hope that your listeners do visit the website, because in a way it then becomes the intersection between how they, their paths and my paths, you know, connect. So we can stay connected, whether they want to buy the stuff or not. If we can connect, that's what really matters, because at the end of the day, we're all trying to build community.
For sure. For sure. And you have a pretty awesome community. It looks like that you're building on YouTube, where you share a lot of valuable information. I know so many people want to learn how to save seeds and to, you know, to do more homesteading and return back to the land and build some relationships with plants. So beautiful. Is that YouTube Small House Farms as well, or just?
It is. Yep. Small House Farm. You know, and the YouTube's kind of fun, because I found a lot of people are very visual learners. They like to see it happening, so then they can reproduce that at home. And it was one of those things where, you know, it was a technological choice that we made. Do we want to step into this world? But I'm so thankful that we did, because it's allowed us these opportunities to share in a more physical form. This is what we're really doing at our farm. You can see the farm, you can see the kids, you can see the plants that we're growing. And I think that's really just a beautiful place for us to get together and to share ideas.
That is fun. That's awesome. Thank you so much for all of the work that you're doing. Do you have any major last things you want to say to the listeners of this show before we say goodbye?
I always hate to say goodbye, but you know, if I was going to say something to your listeners, I guess I would just say, you know, if you're new to herbalism, if you come to this podcast because you're curious and you want to learn, you know, just take the advice that we shared earlier and just pick one plant, even if it's just in your backyard. Find one herb, get to know it, sit down with it, listen to it, smell it, taste it, experience everything that it has to offer. You know, herbalism, much like seed saving, is something that has happened for thousands of years. And it's really already inside of your DNA. We just have to take a moment to open it up and unlock it.
Amen. Heck yes. I love that. Great, great words of wisdom. And I, again, am so grateful that you came on the show with me. I really hope that people visit you at Small House Farm and all the many ways that you're sharing brilliant information. Hope they buy your books for sure. I know I'm putting them on my bookshop list, and buy your really incredible products and learn from you and connect with you and build that relationship with you.
I hope so too, Mel. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
You're so welcome. Thank you, Bevan. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of The Herbalist Path. Being on this journey with you is absolutely incredible. If you dig this episode, please leave me a review on your favorite podcast player and share it with your friends, so that together we can make herbalism hashtag spread like wildflowers. On another note, I must mention that while I know you're getting some good info here, it's important to remember that this podcast is purely for entertainment and educational purposes and is not intended to be a substitute for medical treatment. While the information in this podcast is absolutely relevant, herbs work differently for each person and each condition. That's why I recommend you work with a qualified practitioner, whether that be another herbalist, a naturopath, or your doctor. So thank you again. I am truly honored that you're tuning into these episodes and on the path with me to make sure that there's an herbalist in every home again.
Don't forget to share this episode with your friends so that we can make herbalism. Hashtag spread like wildflowers.
I wanted to take a quick pause to show some love and gratitude to our sponsors of the Herbalist Path podcast, who make this show possible for me and possible for you too. So here it goes.
Medicinal mushrooms are all the rage these days, if you didn't know already. And with great reason, because they are powerful medicine that can improve your health and your life in so many different ways. When they're well made. Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of stuff on the market that isn't going to be so effective. And that's why you need to find a brand that you can actually trust. For me, that brand is Whole Sun Wellness. And this is the creation of a brilliant woman and fellow mama, Jamie Bonfiglio. She's an international mushroom educator that has been working in the medicinal mushroom industry for years. And this is when she saw firsthand how many other companies take shortcuts when it comes to their products. And Jamie wasn't having it. She set out to build her company the right way. Whole Sun Wellness is here to raise the industry standards so those crap mushrooms on the market aren't getting into your body or your family's body. Whole Sun Wellness is the first company to test and report nutritional facts for all of their extracts. They go beyond industry standards every step of the way, from sourcing to extraction and final testing. And as the owners of the largest medicinal mushroom farm in the United States, Whole Sun Wellness is taking control of their supply chain for the highest quality and absolute full transparency. They're even the first company to include pure mycelium extract in every single product. So when you're thinking of getting medicinal mushrooms for you and your family, Whole Sun Wellness is exactly the ones you want. Also, be sure to check out their new Mycolites. These are the world's first dissolvable electrolyte tablets. They're featuring functional mushroom extracts that'll give you more energy, more stamina, and recovery as well. And who couldn't use all of that? The other thing is, they are these adorable little mushroom-shaped tablets, and they come in like a little Altoids box, but way cooler than Altoids, because they're Mycolites. Anyways, head to wholesunwellness.com to grab yourself some Mycolites and all of the other functional medicinal mushrooms that you and your family need, and of course, you can grab that link right here in the show notes now.